you love here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Brian Lynn reports on new methods to grow food in space. Gregory Stockel has a story on lighthouses for sale in the U.S. Faith Perlow answers a question about the difference between the words help and aid. Later, we listen to a story by Herman Melville called Benito Sereno. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The American Space Agency, NASA, is supporting new methods to grow food in space to support astronauts during long missions. NASA recently announced the winners of a competition in which teams proposed ways to produce unusual foods in space. The agency plans to send astronauts to the Moon and Mars in the future. It also hopes to establish long-term bases in space. To do this, NASA says it will need to find effective food production systems to support human space travelers. NASA's competition is called the Deep Space Food Challenge. The latest part of the challenge involved teams creating small working models of food production systems designed for space. The systems should require few resources and create little waste. Judges from NASA chose 8 winners. 5 of the teams are based in the United States. The others were based in Australia, Sweden, and Finland. NASA invited all the winners to create full-size versions of their food production methods over the next year. The U.S. teams also each received $150,000 in prize money to help develop their systems. Amy Kaminsky helped organize the competition for NASA's Space Technology Mission Directorate in Washington. Kaminsky said she was pleased to announce the winners and looks forward to seeing where these teams can take their technologies next. One of the winners was Air Company of Brooklyn, New York. The company developed a system for turning air, water, electricity, and yeast into food. The company says the system can turn carbon dioxide that astronauts breathe out into high-protein nutrients to support humans in space. Air Company's co-founder and chief technology officer is Stafford Sheehan. He told Reuters news agency that the yeast-based food is healthier than the drink Tang. Tang was a drink product that NASA astronaut John Glenn popularized in 1962 when he became the first American to orbit Earth. Sheehan said he first developed his carbon conversion technology as a way to produce high-purity alcohols for jet fuel, the alcoholic drink vodka, and other products. He noted that the NASA competition led him to change his invention to produce a protein-rich mix for astronauts. Sheehan said his product is similar to many protein shakes on the market. He compared its taste to that of seitan, a tofu-like food made from wheat gluten, sometimes used as a substitute for meat. He said the product is sweet-tasting. Among the other winners were a bioregenerative system from a Florida laboratory to raise fresh vegetables, mushrooms, and even insects to be used as food. A team from California said it developed a process that copies the natural photosynthesis process to produce plant and mushroom-based materials. And scientists in Finland created a system that uses gas fermentation to produce proteins. Up to $1.5 million in prize money will be divided among the final winners of the competition. I'm Brian Lynn.
The United States is offering 10 American lighthouses for new owners. The lighthouses have stood along ocean and lake coasts for generations to help guide and protect ship and boat travel. The General Services Administration, or GSA, operates the Lighthouse Release Program. It aims to preserve the properties. Most of the buildings are more than 100 years old. Modern technology, including satellites, means lighthouses are no longer required for navigation, said John Kelly of GSA. And while the Coast Guard often keeps aids to navigation at or near the lighthouses, the structures themselves mostly go unused. Yet the public likes to visit the tall, bright, white towers. Many are popular with tourists and are also subjects of photographs, paintings, and other art. The GSA has been changing ownership of lighthouses since Congress passed the National Historic Lighthouse Preservation Act in 2000. About 150 lighthouses have changed ownership, 80 or so given away, and another 70 sold. The program has raised more than $10 million. This year, 6 lighthouses are being offered at no cost to federal, state, or local government agencies, nonprofits, educational organizations, or other groups. New owners must agree and be able to make repairs and preserve the buildings. They also have to make the lighthouses available to the public for educational, recreational, or cultural purposes. The buildings offered include the 10.4-meter-tall Plymouth Gurnett Light in Massachusetts. The 8-sided wooden structure dates to 1842. But a lighthouse has been at the site since 1768. The site was the first to employ a woman as lighthouse keeper. John Kelly's personal favorite of the structures is Warwick Neck Light in Warwick, Rhode Island. The 15.5-meter-tall lighthouse dates to 1827. It was an important navigation tool for sea travelers making their way to Providence, Rhode Island. Other lighthouses being offered at no cost include Lind Point Lighthouse in Old Saybrook, Connecticut, and Erie Harbor North Pier Lighthouse in Pennsylvania. Nonprofits already care for some of the lighthouses. The group can request to continue doing so, Kelly said. If a new owner is not found for a lighthouse, it goes on market to be sold for the highest price offered. 4 lighthouses are to be sold this year. Cleveland Harbor West Pierhead Light in Ohio is one of them. The 15.5-meter steel tower was built in 1911 and rises above Lake Erie. The property can be reached by boat only, but provides an extensive view of Cleveland's skyline. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Hi, Faith. What's today's topic for Ask a Teacher?
Hi, Dan. Today, we are answering Mayer's question about the difference between help and aid.
That reminds me. Do you have any tips to help our listeners? Is there anything that has helped you in learning either a new skill or a new language?
That's a great question, Dan. I actually had to relearn English a bit when I got my master's. I had been studying Russian for so many years that some of my English grammar was just not as strong. Some ideas that helped me were starting from the beginning and reviewing.
What do you mean by that?
Don't be afraid to go back and review easier content. That repetition will help. And if you've had a long break, don't be afraid to start over or start from the beginning. Challenge yourself a little, but give your brain time to remember older content. Do you have any study tips to aid our learners, Dan?
Well, from my own experience learning Spanish, something that really helped me was attending Spanish conversation clubs. It was a low-stress way to practice speaking with other Spanish learners and also make some friends. So I would encourage our listeners to see if there's any English-speaking clubs where they live. And I'm sure many of our listeners already do this, but watching English movies can be really helpful to learn the language. And if the speaking is too fast, just turn on the subtitles and read along.
Those are some great ideas and will be a big help to our learners.
Thanks for sharing your tips, Faith. Now let's listen to this week's Ask a Teacher.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between help and aid. Dear teacher, I am Mayer from Colombia. I have been listening to the podcast since May 2020, and I have learned so much. I would like to ask you about the difference between aid and help. Thanks, Mayer. Thank you, Mayer, for writing to us and listening to our podcast. The words aid and help can sometimes mean the same thing. But there are a few differences. Let us look at these two words more closely. As a verb, help means to assist or to give support. When you help someone, you make things easier for them in some way. He helped me make dinner last night. As a noun, help means the act of doing something in support of someone, to complete a task for, or to make it easier for the person. It can also be an action taken if a person is in danger and needs to be rescued or supported. She could use your help tomorrow night at the party. Their neighbors gave them help after their house caught fire. I yelled help when I fell and broke my leg. Like help, the word aid can be either a verb or a noun. As a verb, aid means providing what is useful or necessary. I aided the teacher by handing out graded papers. Aid as a noun can also be the supplies, materials, or support that are provided. When we think of aid, we think of organizations, governments, and people providing necessary things like food, clothing, money, and equipment to those who need it. The organization provided aid to those affected by the earthquake. Also, as a noun, aid can be something used to help perform a task. Visual aids can be useful for learning. An aid with the letter E on the end is a person who assists someone. Sometimes they can be a caregiver to an elderly person or a person with a disability. An aid can also be a person who assists someone with their tasks, like a teacher or government official. Lori gets experience in the classroom by being a teacher's aide. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Mayor. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Our story today is called Benito Sereno. It was written by Herman Melville. We will tell this story in three parts. Here is Shep O'Neill with part one of Benito Sereno.
Captain Benito Sereno hurried aboard his ship. It was ready to sail. A bright sun and a soft breeze promised good weather ahead. The ship's anchor was raised, and the San Dominique, old but still seaworthy, moved slowly out of the harbor of Valparaiso on the west coast of Chile. It was carrying valuable products and slaves up the Pacific coast to Callao, another Spanish colonial port near Lima, Peru. The slaves, both male and female, slept on deck. They were not chained because their owner, Don Alejandro, said they were peaceful. The San Dominique moved steadily forward under a clear sky. The weather showed no sign of change. Day after day, the soft breeze kept the ship on course toward Peru. Slave traffic between Spain's colonial ports in this year of 1799 had been steady, but there were few outbreaks of violence. What happened, therefore, on board the San Dominique could not have been expected. On the seventh day out, before daybreak, the slaves rose up in rebellion. They swept through the ship with handspikes and hatchets, moving with the fury of desperate men. The attack was a complete surprise. Few of the crew were awake. All hands, except the two officers on the watch, lay in a deep, untroubled sleep. The rebels sprang upon the two officers and left them half dead. Then, one by one, they killed 18 of the sleeping crew. They threw some overboard, alive. A few hid and escaped death. The rebels tied up 7 others, but left them alive to navigate the ship. As the day began to break, Captain Sereno came slowly, carefully, up the steps toward the chief rebel leader, Babo, and begged for mercy. He promised to follow Babbo's commands if he would only put an end to the killings. But this had no effect. Babbo had three men brought up on deck and tied. Then the three Spaniards were thrown overboard. Babbo did this to show his power and authority, that he was in command. Babbo, however, promised not to kill Captain Sereno. But everything he said carried a threat. He asked the captain if in these seas there were any Negro countries. None, Sereno answered. Then take us to Senegal or the neighboring island of St. Nicholas. Captain Sereno was shaken. That is impossible, he said. It would mean going around Cape Horn, and this ship is in no condition for such a voyage, and we do not have enough supplies or sails or water. Take us there anyway, Babbo answered sharply, showing little interest in such details. If you refuse, we will kill every white man on board. Captain Sereno knew he had no choice. He told the rebel leader that the most serious problem in making such a long voyage was water. Babbo said they should sail to the island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. He knew that no one lived on the island, but water and supplies could be found there. He forced Captain Sereno to keep away from any port. He threatened to kill him the moment he saw him start to move toward any city, town, or settlement on shore. Sereno had to agree to sail to the island of Santa Maria. He still hoped that he might meet along the way, or at the island itself, a ship that could help him. Perhaps, who knows, he might find a boat on the island and be able to escape to the nearby coast of Arauco. Hope was all he had left, and that was getting smaller each day. Captain Sereno steered south for Santa Maria. The voyage would take weeks. 8 days after the ship turned south, Babbo told Captain Sereno that he was going to kill Don Alejandro, owner of the slaves on board. He said it had to be done. Otherwise, he and the other slaves could never be sure of their freedom. He refused to listen to the captain's appeals and ordered two men to pull Don Alejandro up from below and kill him on deck. It was done as ordered. Three other Spaniards were brought up and thrown overboard. Babbo warned Sereno and the other Spaniards that each one of them would go the same way if any of them gave the smallest cause for suspicion. Sereno decided to do everything possible to save the lives of those remaining. He agreed to carry the rebels safely to Senegal if they promised peace and no further bloodshed. And he signed a document that gave the rebels ownership of the ship and its cargo. Later, as they sailed down the long coast of Chile, the wind suddenly dropped. The ship drifted into a deep calm. For days, it lay still in the water. The heat was fierce, the suffering intense. There was little water. That made matters worse. Some of those on board were driven mad. A few died. The pressure and tension made many violent, and they killed a Spanish officer. After a time, a breeze came up and set the ship free again, and it continued south. The voyage seemed endless. The ship sailed for weeks with little water on board. It moved through days of good weather and periods of bad weather. There were times when it sailed under heavy skies, and times when the wind dropped and the ship lay becalmed in lifeless air. The crew seemed half dead. At last, one evening in the month of August, the San Dominique reached the lonely island of Santa Maria. It moved slowly toward one of the island's bays to drop anchor. Not far off lay an American ship, and the sight of the ship caught the rebels by surprise. The slaves became tense and fearful. They wanted to sail away quickly, but their leader, Babo, opposed such a move. Where could they go? Their water and food were low. He succeeded in bringing them under control and in quieting their fears. He told them they had nothing to fear, and they believed him. Then he ordered everyone to go to work, to clean the decks and put the ship in proper and good condition so that no visitor would suspect anything was wrong. Later, he spoke to Captain Sereno, warning him that he would kill him if he did not do as he was told. He explained in detail what Sereno was to do and say if any stranger came on board. He held a dagger in his hand, saying it would always be ready for any emergency. The American vessel was a large trade ship and seal hunter, commanded by Captain Amasa Delano. He had stopped at Santa Maria for water. On the American ship, shortly after sunrise, an officer woke Captain Delano and told him a strange sail was coming into the bay. The captain quickly got up, dressed, and went up on deck. Captain Delano raised his spyglass and looked closely at the strange ship coming slowly in. He was surprised that there was no flag. A ship usually showed its flag when entering a harbor where another ship lay at anchor. As the ship got closer, Captain Delano saw it was damaged. Many of its sails were ripped and torn. A mast was broken, and the deck was in disorder. Clearly, the ship was in trouble. The American captain decided to go to the strange vessel and offer help. He ordered his whaleboat put into the water and had his men bring up some supplies and put them in the boat. Then they set out toward the mystery ship. As they approached, Captain Delano was shocked at the poor condition of the ship. He wondered what could have happened, and what he would find.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.